Today, are we facing another financial sector crisis? Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our podcasts, in which we discuss the latest finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. At first blush, the news at home and abroad appears to be steering us towards our most risky scenario for outcome, where global financial markets are disrupted and home prices fall by at least 20% as confidence wanes. Some would call this GFC 2.0. So let's look at the evidence. In Australia, as we predicted, a massive class action lawsuit is being planned on behalf of Australian bank customers that have entered into mortgage finance agreements with banks since 2012. Law firm Chamberlain's has been appointed to act in the planned class action lawsuit, which has been instructed by Roger Donald Brown of MortgageDeception.com in the action that aims to represent various Australian bank customers that have incurred financial losses as a result of entering into mortgage loan contracts with banks since 2012. As the AFR put it, lawyers representing up to 300,000 litigants are planning an $80 billion action against mortgage lenders, mortgage brokers, and financial regulators in a class action that would dwarf previous actions. Roger Brown, a former Lloyd's of London insurance broker, said he already has about 200,000 borrowers ready to join the action and has $75 million backing from UK and European investors. There has been a scam, he said, about mortgage lending to Australian property buyers, but the train has hit the buffers and there needs to be a recompense. As we discussed before, if loans made were unsuitable, as defined by the credit legislation, there is potential recourse. This could be a significant risk to the major players if it gains momentum. And more will likely join up if home prices fall further and mortgage repayments get more difficult. But we think individuals, of course, must also take some responsibility too. Next, we see now a number of major media outlets starting to blame the Royal Commission for the falls in home prices, tighter lending standards, and even damage to the broader economy. Talk about shooting the messenger. The fact is, we've had years of poor lending practice and poor regulation, but the industry and regulators kept stum, preferring to enjoy the fruits of overgenerous lending. The Royal Commission is doing a great job of exposing what has been going on. In fact, the reaction appears to be that what has been hidden is now in the sunshine, and it is true that sunlight is the best disinfectant. Structural malpractice is being exposed, some of which may be illegal, and some of which is certainly falling below community expectations. But let's be clear, it's the poor behaviour of the banks and the regulators which have placed us in this difficult position. Hoping bad lending remains hidden is a crazy path to resolution. At least if the issues are in the open, they stand a chance of being addressed. But it is also true that just as lax lending allowed households to get bigger mortgages than they should and bid home prices higher to the benefit of the banks and the GDP outturn, the reverse is also true. Tighter lending will lead to less credit being available, which in turn will translate to lower home prices and less book growth for the banks. But do not lay this all at the door of the Royal Commission. They are actually doing Australia a great service in a most professional manner. And there is yet more bad news. UBS came out today with an update saying that the housing market is slowing, with house prices falling and credit conditions tightening. Given the number of headwinds the market is facing, many investors are now questioning whether the housing correction could become disorderly, they say. We expect credit growth to slow sharply and believe the risk of a credit crunch is rising. And they walk through the main areas, including tighter lending, interest-only loans, and foreign buyers. Specifically, they highlight that the approved foreign investment in housing is down by 65%. The Foreign Investment Review Board just released data for the years 16 to 17. The value of approvals to buy residential housing collapsed 65% year on year, the lowest level since 12-13, and mostly reversing prior super booms. The fall was across both new, down 66%, and established housing, and led by falls in New South Wales at 66% and Victoria at 61% down. They said that the collapse in 16-17 may be overstated because of the introduction of application fees in December 2015, meaning that the fall in transactions is less pronounced, but there is still likely to have been a drop in transactions, reflecting more structural changes, including the lift in taxes on foreigners, domestic lenders tightening standards for foreign buyers, effectively no longer lending against foreign sources of income or collateral, as well as tighter capital controls, especially from China. So now the UBS base case is for a small fall in prices ahead, assuming house prices will fall at least by 5% over the coming year, and that bad and doubtful debts will only modestly rise given the current very benign credit environment. But they also talk about a downside scenario, which reflects a more disorderly correction in the housing market, thanks to a credit crunch. And it could result, they say, in approximately a 40% reduction in the major bank share prices. This is likely due to credit growth falling more substantially by at least 2 to 3% compounded, and credit impairment charges rising significantly as the credit cycle turns. This scenario, they say, would put pressure on the bank's net interest margins. And litigation risks from class actions for mortgage mis-selling is also a tail risk. Dividends would need to be cut in this scenario. Given the leverage in the banking system, accurately predicting the extent of a downturn is very difficult, they say, as was seen in 2008. And the reason they still hold to their milder view is the expectation that the government will step in to assist and slow the implementation of recommendations from the Royal Commission. To quote Scott Morrison on 2GB on the 23rd of March, if banks stop lending, then what do people think that is going to mean for people starting businesses or getting loans or getting jobs or all of this? In the budget papers, the Treasury have actually highlighted this as a bit of a risk with the processes that we are going through. We have got to be very careful. These stories are heartbreaking, I agree, but we have also to be very cautious about, well, how do we respond to that? What is the right reaction to that? Is it to just throw more regulation there, which basically constipates the banking and financial industry, which means that people can't start businesses and people can't get jobs. People can't get home loans. Or do we move to a smarter way of how this is all done? And I think to the era of financial technology in particular, there are some real opportunities there. We are going to continue to listen and carefully respect the Royal Commission, he said. Not prejudging the findings, but be very careful about any responses that are made, because this can determine how strong an economy we live in over the next 10 years and whether people get jobs and start businesses. But in essence, expect some unnatural acts from the government to try to keep the bubble going a little longer. But all bets are off the other side of the election. And the third risk, and the one which takes us closest to GFC 2.0, is what is happening in Italy. Now, I'm not going back over the history, but after months of wrangling, Italy's political crisis has hit an impasse. The country faces an institutional crisis without precedent in the history of the Italian Republic. Its implications extend well beyond Italy to the European Union as a whole. Since an election on the 4th of March, there has been endless vain attempts to form a government, with the likely outcome changing almost every day. By mid-May, the Five Star Movement and the League, both populist parties, had come together to draft a programme for government, featuring tax cuts and spending plans. But it sent shivers down the spine of those contemplating Italy's public debt, running at over 130% of GDP. Italy's president, Sergio Mattarella, had originally planned to put a former IMF economist, Carlo Collarati, at the head of the government of technocrats, tasked with steering the country back to the polls after the summer. But the president was reportedly considering changing tack after a meeting on May the 29th, amid growing evidence of support in parliament for an earlier vote. Not a single big party has declared its readiness to back Mr. Clarati's proposed administration in a necessary vote of confidence. So the president is expected to decide on May 30th whether to call a snap election as early as July in an effort to resolve a rapidly deepening political and economic crisis that has sent tremors through global financial markets. There was also concern that the populist parties would win a bigger parliamentary majority in the new election, creating a bigger risk for the future of the Eurozone. In a sign of investors' concerns, the yield gap between Italian and German benchmark government bonds soared from 190 basis points on May the 28th to more than 300. And the governor of the Bank of Italy warned his compatriots not to forget that we are only ever a few steps away from the very serious risk of losing the irreplaceable asset of trust. The yield on two-year debt has risen from below zero to close to 2%. Italy's 10-year bond yields, which is a measure of the country's sovereign borrowing costs, breached 3% on Tuesday, the highest in 4 years. At the start of the month, they were at just 1.8%. Italy's sovereign debt is 2.3 trillion euros and is the largest in the Eurozone. The Italian stock market was also down 3% on Tuesday and has lost around 30% of its value this month. But these movements need to be put in some sort of context. The Italian stock market is still only back to its levels of last July, after experiencing a strong bull run since 2016. In 2011-2012, Italian bonds breached 7% and threatened a fiscal crisis for the government in Rome. Yields are still some distance from these extreme distress levels. But George Soros was quoted in the Financial Times saying, "The EU is in an existential crisis. Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong," he said. "To escape the crisis, it needs to reinvent itself." Mr. Soros said, "Tackling the European migration crisis may be the best place to start, but stress the importance of not forcing European countries to accept set quotas of refugees." He said, "The Dublin regulation, which decides which nation is responsible for processing a refugee's asylum status, largely based on which country the individual first enters, had put an unfair burden on Italy and other Mediterranean countries, with disastrous political implications." While austerity policies appeared initially to have been working, Mr. Soros said, "The addiction to austerity had harmed the euro and was now worsening the European crisis." US President Trump's exit from the nuclear arms deal with Iran and the uncertainty over tariffs that threaten transatlantic trade will also harm European economies, particularly Germany's, he said. While a strong dollar was prompting flight from emerging market economies. He said, "We may be heading for another major financial crisis." Meanwhile, years of austerity policies have led working people to feel excluded and ignored, sentiment that has been exploited by populists and nationalistic politicians, said Mr. Soros. He called for greater emphasis on grassroots organisations to meaningfully engage with citizens. So to play devil's advocate, if Italy were to leave the Eurozone, the lira would drop hard. Most probably, Italy would default on its debt, and this would hit the Eurozone banks hard, especially those in Germany and France, because they are saddled with about half of the outstanding debt. And just like in the GFC a decade back, global counterparty bank risk will rise. And this time, this is sovereign-based, so they may even go higher. The US dollar may well run hot, and there will be a flight to quality, tightening the capital markets, lifting rates, and causing global stocks and commodities to crash. Possibly a recession will follow. In Australia, the dollar will slide, significantly fueling stock market falls and a further drop in home prices, leading to higher levels of default and recession, despite the Reserve Bank cutting rates and even trying QE. Now, the financial situation in Italy at the moment is actually a far cry from the Eurozone crisis in 2012, when it really did look possible that weaker member states could be forced to default and the single currency would collapse. Then that situation was finally diffused when the head of the European Central Bank announced that he would do whatever it takes to stop this breakup happening, unveiling an emergency program of backstop bond buying by the central bank. This reassured private investors that they would at least get their money back, and bond yields in countries like Italy and Spain fell back to earth, ending the risk of a destructive debt spiral. But the latest deadlock in Rome is nevertheless the biggest crisis in the Eurozone since Greece last threatened to leave in 2015. And Italy is a much larger economy than Greece. If the third largest country in the bloc exited the euro, it is doubtful that the single currency would survive. The UK's FT 100 fell 1.3%, while the German DAX was down 1.5%. It's a market in total panic, said one fund manager, who also noted that a total lack of confidence existed in the outlook for Italian public finances. And the chief economic advisor at Allianz in the US said, if the political situation in Italy worsens, the longer-term spillover will be felt in the US via a stronger dollar and lower European growth. So whether you look globally or locally, it's risk on at the moment, and we, it seems, are teetering on the edge of our scenario four. This will not be pretty, and it will not be quick. I see a slow-moving train wreck still grinding down the tracks with no way out. If you like what you've heard here today, please like the post and add a comment or a question. If you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst at Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next time.